You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm John Herlig. 3 years ago, in a boatyard in Reedville, Virginia, in the United States, I came across an old, sun-bleached boat named Ave Del Mar. I learned that long before she became mine, she had sailed around the world. She's been through the Panama and Suez canals, has cruised in the sunny Mediterranean, and has rounded the infamous Cape Horn. Now she's begun a new journey with me. This is Postcards from Sea, and this is where I share stories of the people and places I encounter as Ave Del Mar and I sail the world together. Say what you want now. Time goes forward. Go and catch your jet. You will find your moment. Time goes forward. Stay and have a sleep. Let's dream about the future. Hello, hello, hello. This is Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig. I am in Florida aboard Ave Del Mar, and I am joined this week by my daughter Alex via Skype for an episode of the show that I have named More Feta Cheese, Please. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning.
How are things in Virginia?
Things are good in Virginia, mostly.
Is it Christmassy and cold?
It is. It's nice and cold. Let's hope for snow or something cool like that.
Yes, that is awesome. It is not cold.
No.
In West Palm Beach, Florida.
I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, you already know that. Okay, we are going to start today's show with an episode of True or False. Are you ready?
Morning test. Yes.
Morning test. Okay, question number one. You were angry at me for the first 8 or 9 years of your life because I refused to stop the car to see if I could resuscitate roadkill.
Yes, true.
Yeah?
True. I think I many times yelled, if it was a child, you would stop or something like
well,
that.
Well, it was a child and it was like 1 centimeter thick because it had been run over by 100 cars. I might not.
I was a dramatic child.
You were a dramatic child. I recall the nurse at Fairfax Hospital, a story you've heard many times.
Yes.
When Alex is my oldest, my firstborn, and she is currently 26.
I am.
Thank you. You passed a test, I passed a test. And when she was born, this was back in the day when they were still like, you went through labor in the labor room, and then you gave birth in the operating room. And then the mother went to the recovery room, and the child went to the nursery, whatever it might have been called. It was just very clinical. And I went into the nursery where all the babies were so I could see my baby. And this very, very pleasant nurse looked at me and picked up Alex and handed her to me. And she looked me dead in the eye, she the nurse, not Alex. And she said, oh, by the way, Fairfax Hospital was, I believe, in the early 1990s, the second busiest birthing hospital in the United States.
I didn't know
and
that.
And that's a lot of babies, and that's a lot of hospitals. And this woman looked at me, and she said, I have been a nurse here for 22 years, and this is the loudest child I have ever heard.
Sorry.
And that was the beginning of the end of the calm in my life.
Yes.
Okay, question number two.
All right.
Your first real favorite song was, in fact, by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
It was. It was Under the Bridge.
It's an awesome first real, like, grown-up favorite song to
have.
Yeah,
I had no idea what it meant, but, you know, probably
you
didn't
lyrics.
Either.
I still have no idea. Does it mean something?
Yeah, it's not a happy song for a two-year-old to sing, but...
It's got a pleasant melody.
Yeah, I liked it.
Do you remember when I had no idea that Wonderful
yes,
by Ever...
was not truly
ever,
a wonderful
yeah,
story.
Yeah, I was just like happy little song.
Sarcastic.
Everything is wonderful now. And I'd sing along. And then all of a sudden I realized that the entire song was just like an almost suicide.
Yeah, note. Sad.
That was sad. Anyway, we used to have awesome dance parties when I would come home from work.
We did.
I would crank the stereo on. Songs off the top of your head that might have been included in these dance parties?
Spoon Man, I remember.
Yes! We had some Soundgarden, mm-hmm. some Stone Temple Pilots, a lot of Green Day.
Yes.
Yeah, basically the entire Dookie album. and all that good early 90s stuff. And we would just rock out and have dance parties in the family room because I am one fabulous dancer.
Sure.
Question number three. When the head of an African drum, known as a djembe, explodes in your dorm room, it makes a truly horrifying sound.
Oh, true.
Okay, and you know this how?
My djembe, which you gave me as a high school graduation present, could not withstand the heat of my freshman dorm room. and it popped, basically, yeah. for lack of a yeah. better word. It was awful. Yeah. And I was yeah. distressed.
I know
I'm
that very well.
I'm distressed in a I'm lot of one... these stories.
Well, it's, you know, I don't know. Distress is an emotion or reaction to an emotion. It's a part of life growing up, yes. figuring out how to be distressed and what to do with it. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, continuing on this happy path. True or false? Your father, in a moment of blind rage, when you were, I don't know, maybe 10, might have grabbed a sheet of poster board and a black marker and drew the solar system with you where the sun should be, depicting the fact that apparently everything in the entire universe revolved around you.
I don't recall that one.
Well, I'm perhaps the one that shouldn't recall that. I don't know if that's out of the, like, Parenting 101 book or not.
Of what not to do?
Yeah, yeah. It might be out of the Parenting 101 what not to do. But it was very, very effective.
I really think I've blocked that from my memory, but I know the story, so I'm going to say it's
true. An awesome moment. I'm not sure between you and your mother who wanted to kill me more for doing that, but I damned effectively made my point.
I'm sure you were correct.
Question number next.
Okay.
By the age of 6, you could stand on an inverted milk crate and properly run the cash register, including correctly counting change without the help of a cash register.
I could do that.
At a high volume coffee shop.
True.
And what made you the maddest while you were at the age of 6 standing on a milk crate running the register?
People would assume that a 6-year-old didn't know how to count money.
Fools.
And would condescendingly tell me how much money they were giving me and how much change I should give them back. And I got very angry because I, you know.
Or my kid.
6-year-old Alex was working the register for a reason. Because I could. And I would kind of condescendingly give them their change back.
It's important to learn some good condescension by the age of 6.
Yes.
Here's your change. This is a $5 bill. This is a quarter. It's worth 25 cents.
Just trying to speak their language.
I wouldn't have put you on the register if you couldn't do it.
I would not have.
I was a nice father in certain ways, very patient in a certain way or two, I'm sure. But, man, once we walked in the door of work, you could do it or you were crew.
Yes.
And if you couldn't do it, you got sent to the back room to do dishes.
Absolutely.
Or if you were Brandon, to Windex the walls.
Yes.
Or to wash silverware, which I then tricked him from putting from the bin in which he washed it into the bin where it was actually going to get washed.
But to be fair, he was 3, 4.
Maybe four. Anyway. Okay, I have no idea where I am on this list. Let's try this one. True or false, you and I had legitimate and brilliant plans to create a video series on YouTube of drunken book reviews where we reviewed only classics that we had never read or books that we hadn't opened since maybe childhood and really didn't remember that well.
I'm sensing a pattern in these answers because that one's also true. This is not a very difficult test. Yes, that is true. We were in the car trying to explain the book Where the Red Fern Grows to my brother, your son.
And your answer is On the Dog's Grave.
And spoiler alert. And
yeah. If anyone listening is about to start reading Where the Red Fern Grows, I apologize. I just ruined it for you.
Yes.
dogs die.
You and I did not
let's
remember.
Let's talk Old Yeller. No, I'm just kidding.
No, let's not. I think we did not remember a single parallel fact from
the
book.
Yeah, we each remembered a number of actual, nebulous facts.
Yes.
But none of the same ones.
No, and we both loved the book. The book stuck with both of us, and we each remembered about two or three actual details of the book. And it was hilarious, and we sounded drunk, and we weren't. But I think it still will make a great YouTube show.
It will, and I'm sorry that I'm leaving the world of cell phone connection and free data plans, so you're going to have to do this show with my mini-me.
No one will tell the difference.
We are not actually the same. I could think of an example if
no,
I could think of one.
That's all right.
He was not eager to get his driver's license.
That's
that
true.
That could not be more or less me than...
less me. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, I'm now making up a question on the fly just to ruin the consistency of the answers.
Sorry.
True or false, your father is a fabulous dancer and a talented singer.
Sure. True. Well, I always enjoyed it.
That doesn't count. Okay, back to the real questions. True or false, everything tastes better with more feta cheese on it.
So true.
And we had a chance recently to experience this phenomenon.
Yes, we were cooking a few meals, assembling on the boat, breakfasts and lunch. And you don't use enough feta.
I only had one block of feta.
I mean,
I can't put a block and a half of feta on your salad, have none for me, and nothing for dinner.
I mean, I wouldn't see a problem
in
with
this,
that.
I think everyone can hear in her voice the fact that she was simply unwilling to accept that there wasn't enough feta on her, whatever it was. Here's your ice cream, Alex. Not enough feta.
Okay, it wasn't that bad. But yeah, we had a few moments over the weekend where...
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt. It went like this. You handing me your empty plate going, that was really good. Thanks, Daddy. Next time... more feta.
Yes.
Yes. It's the cheese version of more cowbell.
It was.
Yeah. Okay. Wrapping up. Question number... Yeah.
Sure.
Turkmenistan is a real country.
True. I still think you made it up. I think he was secretly going to Disney World or somewhere he didn't want to admit.
Now, I have to interrupt.
Told us he was going
real
to Turkmenistan.
Because I understand the point that you're making, and you're making it very well. But to think that I would go to Disneyland without someone holding a gun to my head is laughable, if not verging on criminal.
Yes.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Sure.
Okay.
He told me he was going to Turkmenistan, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to Like, that doesn't sound real. Like, you can't just say Stan at the end of something, and it's a country. But apparently it's real. I saw some beautiful pictures and heard some stories, and I'll believe it.
And I believe that when you saw it written, and there was actually an umlaut over the U.
Yes.
That you either called me or texted me and said, okay, now I've seen the umlaut. I absolutely know it's not a real place. This is just like the original Mission Impossible series, where they would just make up Eastern Bloc countries and stick umlauts over vowels and pretend it was real.
That's what it sounded like.
It was Kyrgyzstan.
Yes.
All over again. So, yeah. But in fact, Turkmenistan is a real place. I think you accept that now.
I do.
And I had the awesome opportunity, because this is the All About Me podcast. Thanks for helping.
Mm-hmm.
I had the awesome opportunity to go to Turkmenistan for a week and a half or so. to stay with my friends, the American Embassy compound, and it was the most awesome thing ever imaginable, because I got to sneak behind the curtain, if you will.
Right.
So, thanks to Aletta and Leonard for having me there and letting me witness what those poor, oppressed people of Turkmenistan. I say that not lightly. It's a terrible place in many regards. But it was a wonderful opportunity to get to witness some of the terror. Okay, we're done with the true or false.
Cool.
So you're no longer allowed during this show to tell me that anything I say
is false.
Is false.
Good. I'm not sure how well I did on that test, so let's move on.
I think you got 100. This is Postcards from Sea, and I'm John Herlig. I'm joined this week by my daughter, Alex, who is joining us via Skype. Thanks for joining in, Alex.
Hello.
Do you have a favorite Ave Del Mar memory?
Oh, geez.
It's
I'm
okay
not sure if I do
no,
in particular.
I don't have
no.
Favorite I colors don't... or favorite foods.
It's like asking my favorite book. I don't.
Yeah.
No, I think.
What was the first time that you got to be on Ave Del Mar when she was underway?
Underway as in?
Moving, sorry.
Moving.
That's boat speak for moving.
I think. Oh, I'm sorry. I should know that. Someone didn't teach me very well.
Well, I'm sorry.
I think we were moving you to a new marina.
Yes, I think that's right. Yumi and Tony.
And I was supposed to get to sail.
No.
But there was no wind.
Oh. I say no. So I think we've somehow created an amalgamation of memories, because you sat on the bow pole. What in God's name are you doing with your microphone? It's very awkward.
I'm sorry. I'd rather it look awkward and you be able to hear me.
Yeah, well, thank God this is not a video broadcast, because you would be fired.
Thanks.
The answer would be false.
sure.
I have photos of you sitting on the bow pulpit of the boat with the mast down. But the mast was up when I moved marinas.
Then
I don't know where we were going. Was you, Tony, and
You're
I
right.
moved the boat from my first Annapolis marina to my second Annapolis marina.
Yes.
I wish I couldn't see you. So she's Skyping and I can see her. And she, as only my child could be, is truly OCD.
Obsessing.
And is just freaking out over her microphone and making faces at it and holding it like it's a cricket that she's going to nurse back to life. And it's awkward. Back to the damn
boat.
Well,
I've stopped now.
Okay,
thank
excellent.
You.
Thank you.
I hope you guys can hear me.
So, back to the... So, we moved the boat.
We did. That must have been a second time, although I don't remember a specific time before that.
Maybe you were drunk. I don't remember either.
Well.
But I feel like I have a picture of you sitting...
You do.
On the bow pulpit with the mast still down. Or maybe the mast was up. Maybe I'm confusing pictures. You know me, I'm not really a very good student of history in that regard. But you and my friend Tony and I did move Ave from her first marina to her second. Back in the days when simply pulling out of a dock was a harrowing experience for me.
It was an experience, I remember.
And I was always frightened, and the boat stalled because there was the leak in the gas and the fuel line. I almost said gas. And it was just, it was a thing. But.
Yeah, I kind of get a spidey sense to not speak to you or look at you wrong when you're pulling out. And that's when I know you're not quite comfortable yet.
Yeah, and that's perhaps changed rather dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely. That was years ago.
Yeah. And well, I have no shame in having been a little uptight at buying a boat and driving it and hardly knowing what the hell I'm doing, but fully appreciating the gravity of the situation and not wanting to be that guy that screws up.
Right. I mean, there's a reason that we get that way. It's because we take it seriously.
Yeah, I was.
That's a good thing.
I met a gentleman here in West Palm recently and had a couple of beers with him. He was telling me that he was. Many people in boats that. The AAA, is that what you get in cars?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like the boat version of AAA is either Boat US or CETO. And that's where you get this package you pay for a year. And when you run out of fuel or run aground and need to get towed or your boat breaks, you just get on the radio and you call them and they come and they tow you in. And you kind of, you know, kick your toe in the dirt and say, oh, thanks for rescuing me. And then they go away. And this guy was telling me that he got a letter from Towboat US that was like, okay, you've called too many times. We're dropping you. Good luck. Try CETO. And the point of that story is simply that you don't want to be that guy. No offense intended to that unnamed person. He's very friendly. I like him. But
no, you don't want to be in that position.
Yeah. And I've called Towboat US. I don't have it anymore, which I think in its own right is an expression of my false confidence. but I think false confidence in Herlig might be redundant.
Well, it's only false if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. I love your logic. Okay, I have to take a break. Again, this is Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about where Alex thinks I should sail and where she would elect to visit me if she could. We'll be back in a second.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organizations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honor of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
Okay, we're back. This is Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig, joined this week by my daughter Alex, who's joining us via Skype. Hi, Alex. So, if I could sail anywhere, if currents and wind and my lack of skill were non-issues and I were in a magic boat, where do you think I should sail for me?
For you? Oh.
For me? I told you it's the All About Me podcast.
You know, it's hard to tell you to do anything other than exactly what you plan to do. Personally, I think you need to find those places that nobody would ever think to answer in this question. You have the skill that I don't think I have to kind of enter a group of people and be humble enough and forward enough at the same time.
The world's friendliest misanthrope, as I've always called
myself. Yes, to join any group and observe and participate. And I think, I mean, you've traveled. You've been to...
Yeah, somewhat.
Several, more compared to me.
More than some, less than others.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's any big... I mean, I don't want to tell you you should go to Europe or Africa. I mean, that's too... broad.
Well, I think that's an awesome answer because it makes me think of the fact that, oh, thank God, this is sort of behind me, not completely, but mostly. When I was getting ready to leave, like leave Annapolis, and I was attempting to cut myself away from my my ties to society, the question was always, where are you going? And I'm like, going sailing. Like, there's not what... I always found it maddening that people would think that I should have a singular dream destination, quote unquote, in mind. Like, my life will have meaning if I can just get the boat to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, it's... And I think you and I have several times compared it to hiking the Appalachian Trail. which was an obsession of mine for a long time.
And is not yet off the list.
No, no, it'll happen.
Yes.
You don't hike the Appalachian Trail to get to Maine. That's not the point.
You better. I think people probably do.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I could drive to Maine. I could fly to Maine.
We pity them for that being
if you just want to get to Maine, you don't hike the trail. If you just want to get to whatever country, you don't buy Ave Del Mar.
Thank you. I agree. So, but then let me ask you this. Where do you think I should sail in this perfect world scenario that you can fly down and visit for a week?
I have never seen, and this is going to be the last answer you expect from me, but I've never seen those pretty white beaches and pretty blue water. So anywhere you go that looks like that, I'm going to come visit.
Anything that looks like a postcard.
Because I've never done that.
I think that's an awesome thing.
Yeah.
I remember the first time that I set foot on, for example, Bahamian soil and was like, oh, now I see what you're talking about with the water. Is that actually the sand under the water that I'm looking at?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
All right. Well, I think we could probably make that happen.
Sounds exciting.
It will be, yeah. So, tell me about the fort that you're sitting in.
Oh, I am in an awesome blanket fort, for lack of any better terminology.
There is no better terminology.
No, it's
you
a blanket
are in
fort.
A grown-up blanket fort.
I am, which is awesome. But I have an excuse, which is it's supposed to make me sound better. not that I wouldn't build one of these and bring in a flashlight and a book and
that sounds like an
just
awesome
hang
thing.
Out. But
and who was the genius behind the blanket fort?
Yes, that would be my boyfriend, Eric.
And what does Eric do for a living?
I guess the term that I would use is lighting designer, but sometimes he's called a grip or an electrician or depending on the shoot. He does a lot of...
Oh, look at you, depending on the
shoot. I know. he does a lot of commercial work and stuff like that, making people look and sound pretty. So I guess he was trying to help me out with
that. Well, he is two for two with you.
Yeah. I know, it's lit. It's lit pretty well in here, considering no one's going to see
you
me.
You look lit from here. Oh, wait, that's
the light
not
is
what
being
I meant.
Bounced off different surfaces. I'm not exaggerating.
Do you have those, like, those lights with the umbrella and, like, it faces backwards? And...
They're not on right now, but we've used them for things in the past.
There might have been a time when I was visiting you. Maybe I was helping you move in, and we were hanging out in your apartment. And there's a cutout between the kitchen and the guest room slash office slash I don't know where to put this throat in that room. And we were hanging out in the living room, and it was dark, and I noticed lights coming through of a certain color coming through the cutout in the wall between the kitchen and that room. And I remember saying so naively, oh, those look like black lights. And Eric says, well, they're actually not black lights, but they do function on a similar frequency.
Yes, he did say that.
or words to that effect.
No, I think that's exactly what he said.
And I kind of said, aw, no wonder you love this guy.
Yeah.
that's awesome. Come with me. Let's look at the lights on the boat.
Yes.
And every time he's been on the boat, I think I'm apologizing for, I'm like, oh, it's LED, I'm sorry. And he's like, no, it's cool. I like, it's good.
Yeah, I think he approves of all of Ave's lighting.
I haven't yet become 100% convinced that he would look at me and go, oh, God, that's horrible. This is what you should do. But I don't know, maybe he would. I'm not convinced.
I don't think he would be mean about it, but if he had suggestions, he would want to share them with you.
Excellent.
He would. So I think you're legitimately well lit.
Now, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm not lit yet. So tell me about sailing Ave in Florida. Oh, interrupting, because I love to interrupt myself. That's what I do. Alex came down to visit me some short-ish period of time ago, longer than a few weeks and less long than a couple of months.
Yeah.
And we hung out on the boat for
we did.
What might have been the fastest week in history.
Which we knew was going to happen.
She stepped off the plane, so she flew into Miami. I'm in West Palm, which is an hour or so by car and perhaps 2 hours by train north of Miami. But being a dad, I'm like, I will take the train down and meet you at the airport just so I can take the train back with you because that sounds like an awesome thing. So, Alex, it was.
Which
absolutely.
It was.
So, Alex steps off the plane. I think we kind of looked at each other and said, yeah, this is going to fly. This week already feels mm-hmm. almost over. And that's kind of how it went. But then we got on the train where we did what?
We did.
Because
cribbage.
I can't find anyone that'll play cribbage with me.
No, me neither. And it's so frustrating. We always play against our computers.
You need someone to do what my daughter did. Which was on the first hand of cribbage that we played. I think this might have been on the train on the way back to Miami. She was already perhaps a little melancholy mm-hmm. with the week being over. And we get on the plane, on the train, and we start playing cribbage. And the very first hand, I think she got like 3 points. And I scored like a 24.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And it was her crib. I think he had like a zero crib and a 3-point hand, and I had 24 points. And I think there might have been tears in your eyes, which we'll blame on the fact that you were leaving, not on your sensitivity to cribbage prowess.
If you don't care, it's not as much fun.
Exactly, and I think you almost won that game.
I did almost, or something.
Maybe actually won, I don't know. But yes, cribbage on the train with your kid is a spectacular phenomenon. Have I told you how I learned to play cribbage?
You did.
I'll tell the people who are listening because they don't know. When I was 18 or 19 and I was living in Switzerland and working on a dairy farm, I took off from the farm and was traveling around Italy. And in Bergamo, Italy, I met a man named Richard, who was from England, from Salisbury, England, not too far from Stonehenge, and relatively speaking. And he and I met at the Bergamo Youth Hostel, which was the single strangest youth hostel I've ever stayed in, and this boy has stayed in a lot of youth hostels. This is run by a crazy old Italian woman whose name I knew and could actually look up because I have a letter from Richard from months later that I saved when he went back. And this crazy woman, like most youth hostels, I swear I've not been drinking, only coffee. Like they'll kick you out by 10 o'clock in the morning. That's frequent. They won't let you back in until 5 o'clock in the evening. They have these sort of draconian rules that come along with the cheap price that kind of work. You're like, you know, it's 1982. I'm getting a bed and free breakfast and a hot shower, and I owe you $11. If you want to kick me out from 10 to 5, I'm cool with that. I'll go sit in the park. But in Bergamo, they wouldn't kick you out. The rooms were weird. And they would only turn on the water heater for like 2 hours a day. So there was this mad rush to take showers. There was some African guy who spoke fluent Italian in the local dialect perfectly, who we were convinced was some sort of spy who had access to people with cars, and we didn't know what was going on. There were two guys from Libya who were staying with us in our room. I think this was... Also, like most youth hostel rooms that I've stayed in, it's always bunk beds, unless you pay more for a private or semi-private room. It's usually bunk beds and maybe like at least 6 bunk beds, so 12 people or so. I mean, they're very, you know, they're like mass incarceration kind of rooms. Mm-hmm. But I think there were just 2 bunk beds in this room. So, no, that can't be. Anyway, 2 or 3. But these 2 guys from Libya who were, you know, it was two bunk beds, me and Richard and the two brothers from Libya who spoke 9 words of English. And so, like, we used my fake Italian to attempt to communicate with them because I knew some Spanish from working in the restaurants when I was a kid, and I could kind of turn that into Italian, and we got through it. Anyway, long story short, the Libyans disappeared and even left their shoes behind. We were convinced they were up to no good. I've really, really fallen off the story. Don't nod at me like that. You're a terrible person. You had a bad upbringing. So, Richard and I would wander around Italy, and we hitchhiked to Venice, and we did all this stuff, and we would sit in coffee shops. It was actually in Venice, in a coffee shop, over a cappuccino, that he started to teach me how to play cribbage. We didn't have a cribbage board, so we had to keep score by hand. And I think I probably lost 60 or so games in a row before I kind of finally got it and started to win.
I think I did the same thing.
World's longest and most awkward how to learn to play cribbage story ever.
I'm glad you learned.
And it has nothing to do with sailing other than the fact that I have 2 cribbage boards on the boat and no one to play cribbage with. But I also have a Yas set. And I bet you there are damned few people. Tell me what you remember about Yas, because I explained it to you. Go, quick.
I don't remember anything. It was...
Sure you do. What do the cards look like?
There's little balls and flowers or something. Yeah, yeah. This sounds like my drunken book reviews.
Exactly.
And
drunken
there's
Yas
something
review.
Strange about eights, and none of the cards are in order, or you can go up, or you can go down, or you can... do something totally different.
All right.
And there's a team aspect.
Right. Yeah, like bridge or euchre or whatever.
And it was just crazy.
Yeah. So Yas would be kind of the unofficial, but really virtually official card game of Switzerland. And it is a trump suit card game played with partners like bridge would be. And it has the strangest rules ever. Like, it goes from 6 to ace, but in the trump suit, 9 is higher than ace and jack is higher than 9. But you can play top down or bottom up, if that's the right way to translate it. Open aber or unten ufer, as we say in Swiss German. And anyway, I have a Yas set, and I certainly have no one to play Yas with, but someday I'm going to anchor somewhere and there's going to be a Swiss person and I'm going to get super excited and we're going to play Yas with my real Yas set that I brought back from Switzerland in 1983 or whenever, and it will be a happy day. I don't even mind losing.
No, it will be very cool.
It will be all about the experience. Oh, so I never finished the story, shockingly, because as I always say, I never finish my own stories because I keep interrupting myself. So Alex came down to spend a week, and during that week we sailed. Alex actually sailed the boat, as in I gave Alex the helm. The engine was off. The sail was up. We had the jib flying. There was no main because I hadn't put it back up because I had taken all the sails down for the hurricane. How was sailing?
It was really cool. It was one of those things where, I mean, I don't know if I would really count it because you did all the work. You put all the
makes
everything
no
in place. But no, it was, I just wanted to sail. That was the one plan that we had for my week that I was determined we were going to actually stick to.
Mine
was that
as well.
I was going to sail, because you tell, you know, your friends or whoever, oh, my dad lived on a boat all through my 20s and how, you know, however
right,
long
right.
it will end up
uh-huh.
being. And I never sailed.
Yeah. Like,
I can't tell that. So
right.
I was really excited. I was reading charts and kind of.
Yeah, no, you were.
I was. I was, although you kept telling me to stop reading it.
Yes.
But
because you can't drive the boat like akin to staring at the little GPS thing on your windshield instead of, you got to look at the road.
Yeah, I was a little tense at first, but I got used to it.
That's that
it
same
was so much
tenseness
fun.
That I had in the beginning in Annapolis, like, you know, when we left to go to the new marina. It's tense mm-hmm. because, like, you can't just pull over to the shoulder and put the emergency brake on
right.
and go, whew, that was getting hairy. The boat
right.
has no brakes.
Yeah,
it,
I mean,
it behaves really more like a horse than a car.
You know, what's funny is I think even if naming boats was not in fashion, you still would have had to name your boat because you do need her cooperation. And
yeah.
from us, whenever we have, like for me, as soon as my computer starts acting up, I have to give it a name because I have to talk to it because I
right.
need its cooperation. So I was
that.
Definitely having a new relationship with Ave while we were sailing. I was like, please just work with me. I'm
yeah.
trying my hardest.
Ave, Jamie Bryson always used to tell me, he'd say, Skipper, your boat knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is just to listen. And it's really been true for the last
yeah.
3.5 years or however long it's been. It was very, very true. So you got to sail. You didn't
mm-hmm.
drive us into anything. We made it to Peanut Island or almost Peanut Island where we were going to row ashore and snorkel. Did we row ashore and snorkel?
We did not.
Did we go shopping when you were here like we were going to do to find me
not.
Shorts? Okay. Did
no.
we go to the bookstore?
No.
No. No, we sat on
we
our asses and drank Earl Grey tea and cooked
yes.
with not quite enough feta cheese, and we read books,
mm-hmm.
and it was an absolutely awesome, awesome week. And when you were getting ready to go into the security line in the airport, what did you tell me?
I said, don't die at sea.
That is exactly what you said. And so far?
Well... Yeah.
Don't give me well.
I didn't mean before you left the country.
All right, I know. It is... still very much my intention to not die at sea. And if by chance I screw up, and I do, oops, in advance. And I'm sorry, at least you'll have this podcast to look back on.
Yeah, thanks.
And sorry about how screwed up my estate will be. But really, I just let me say this for the record, being of sound mind and whatever you're supposed to say in a will.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I own is the boat and the house. Sell the house, divide the money in thirds, give a third to each kid, and the boat, good luck.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay.
We'll figure it out.
We will figure it out. I love you immensely, Alex. Thank you for joining in for the More Feta Cheese, Please edition of Postcards from Sea. That is all for this time. I am counting down to my departure from the United States. So sometime soon I will be leaving, and when I leave, I intend to... broadcast that live as long as the cell phone signal will allow me to on Facebook. So if you don't already, please follow the boat on Facebook. My boat, Ave Del Mar, is on Facebook at, well, she doesn't maintain her own page. I have to do it for her. But her page would be facebook.com/sailing.ave, A-V-E. And in case anybody doesn't know, Ave Del Mar means what, Alex?
Bird of the sea.
Yeah, seabird. Bird of the sea. Ave Del Mar. So follow us and keep an eye out for announcements, and I'll make sure that the Facebook Live thing is happening. You can find me on Facebook as well, John Herlig. Meanwhile, again, Alex, I love you. Thanks for joining in.
Yeah, thank you.
And
love you too, Dad.
And thanks to Eric for rigging your sound and lights so well.
Yes.
Thanks to Boat Radio and Mike McDowell for hosting the show. Boat Radio is awesome. If you haven't already, dig around. Boatradio.tv. There's some awesome, awesome shows by people who have done phenomenal things around the world. There's just a lot of good content. A shout-out to D Imperfection for my theme song, Welcome to Neverland, which is an awesome song. And thanks to all of you for tuning in and supporting what I do. I love you all. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a new show. And so until then, be well and be happy. Bye-bye.
Whew.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organizations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honor of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
Too much pressure for you. You've got no time to be true.